Hey, that's out. That's good. First impressions?
Excellent work. Should we let it run a little? Is there any more surprises on it? Are you satisfied with the extent we've played? Would you like a little more played?
Oh, no. Well,
play another 30 seconds. This is an audition.
There's nothing else.
I'd have to.
Oh, we ended it.
Okay, take it away, Bob. Okay, Mike. We're here.
I haven't seen you for a few weeks. Do you want to talk a little bit about the music? And
yeah, well, since obviously, I'm going to be big in the 90s and a lot of money behind me, and I'll be making a lot of money. The creative subgeniuses in Toronto want to jump on the bandwagon, and they're all auditioning a theme song. So this is...
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you.
Bob.
Ask what you Bob can do for you.
All right, this recent piece we just heard, did it include that? No, that was
a ghost.
Clairvoyance. All right. What we just heard was a piece by the Glacials. Obviously, they've listened to my show for years, and they know that the electric environment is a cold environment. So they picked a title and name for their group to match the theme of Bob. Under electric conditions, you'll catch a cold environment. Mm. So that was the Glacials' offering to Bob, and if it does well, if the response is not favorable, then Bob will use it. You know, the idea is to not match with our audience, but to probe them. So it doesn't necessarily have to be very popular to be picked in this ongoing contest to see what my theme will be. The one we've been using is the best one so far, but the person who made that wants to allow other people to attempt to knock him off the show. So that was the Glacius. Very nice piece.
Yeah. Yeah, it's community radio at its best, isn't it, Bob?
Yeah,
that sort of thing happens.
That's what happens here at Bob's show, community show.
You didn't bring down any sort of audio supplementary material tonight. Is this? Does you have a lot to say, or is it?
Well, I have some tapes, but I'm not going to have you touch them with the pizza on your fingers. So we're going to have to hear Bob's files. No pizza on my tapes, okay?
Okay.
I'm getting a little suspicious of Kent the way he enforced you to touch his pizza, therefore getting this gook on the tapes, and I hope the Glacials don't mind. Now, the Glacials, we can't concentrate on you too much for a moment. I have to get some work done because we got a little delayed 2 weeks ago when Mike couldn't make it. And Kent doesn't evoke the proper file reading that Mike can do. I mean, Kent is excellent in what he does, but there are certain things that had to be done 2 weeks ago that didn't get done. So we have the Glacials here. And they are part of a group that was interviewed by us 2 weeks ago. All right? There was two members 2 weeks ago down. Now there's three more. Five in your
five
enterprise.
Five.
Yeah. This is more sticky stuff. Kent just gave Mike a chocolate bar, which will melt in his fingers. A Mars bar. Marshall bar. Okay, Mike, we've got to get some business done. First off, you didn't get to hear last week what I had to say about the CBC hit job on CKLN.
Right, yeah, we were going to talk about that, and I was away two weeks ago,
yep.
And you said you were going to analyze the show, the segment on the journey.
Yeah, now I did do it for Kent, but it was done well past 1 o'clock or something, and I don't think it got...
1:30, 1:45.
Yeah, it got real late, and it didn't get on tape, so for the archives, we've got to do it
in a speeded up version for those who've heard it before. What are you doing?
Oh, we're just going to go out and smoke something.
Oh, no, man, you can't smoke here. Oh, you can't even smoke out there. No one smokes around Bob. Bob is smoke. Bob, smoke me. Smell me. Okay, now sit down. You guys are nervous or something. You know, smoke break after 5 minutes with Bob. You guys want to get your stuff auditioned, you follow the game just a little longer, right?
Come on, let them smoke.
Yeah, no smoking.
Let them have a cigarette.
Bob's smoking tonight. Now, listen, CBC, all right, they presented the whole thing. Did you see it? Yeah, you did see it. You saw it on your family's own machine, right?
Version.
All right, what happened is CBC basically created the theme that community radio stations, especially CKLN, have to tighten our belts, narrow our perspective, our skills, our talents, our options. And they ended off with a college student listening to a community station. All right? They had begun with him listening to it, turning it on. But at the end, when CBC's Graff, what's that guy's name, McGrath? Paul McGrath? You know, a pig from the Toronto Star days? Told me once he was a fan of Zappa, you know, it can't be anymore the way he's acting on CBC. But he warned the Canadian national audience that the community stations have to get pink again. And the closing shot was the college student who had turned on the station at the beginning of the item, listening and then turning it off and turning his light off. The student, the college student, shut off the radio, shut off the community station. And that was the closing image. So, Paul, if I ever see you in Sam's again, you know what? Okay. So, now, during the show, obviously,
so what's the point, Bob?
Well, that was the overall theme. Turn off the electric environment, but turn off the subgenius environment, not the pink environment, you know. Turn the stations off. That was the overall hidden subliminal subtext of the piece. But inside it, you had Dave Menard, the program director for CKLN, obviously in a hostage position. He's sitting there with his arms folded, doesn't look too comfortable. And it looks like they are forcing him to do something that he doesn't want to do. It's not what he says. He says, okay, verbal line. He says the party line, everything's okay. He covers our side of it. But then they show him going through his index file, all right, with the names of staff of CKLN. And he's going through the section under M. And the camera zooms in on the M section, and you know he was just whizzing by the Bob Marshall private information on that card, that index card. So there was CBC making him telegraph Bob Marshall's private information across the nation, around the world, under satellite conditions, you know, in his office. And I think we were right, because when we heard about this show coming up, this item on the Journal, we said, well, they're looking for Bob. And so the very fact that he was showing or looking through the card index at the M section for Marshall, my colleague, shows that they were trying to flash that image and information with their laser telescopes. They can pick up what's on that card index without being obvious. They can do it through their surveillance. Now, I have to hand it to Bernard, though, that he fooled them. He only gave them Bob Marshall's information, who has nothing to do with me anymore, right? Was a colleague, but the information on that card index does not apply to me, Bob Dobbs, right? So, I have to congratulate Bernard for fooling them. They held them hostage. They forced them to telegraph that information across the video screen, and he fooled them by putting Marshall's name out. All right?
What are some of your comments regarding the you know, the criticisms of the CRTC regarding, you know, quote-unquote balanced journalism? Is that possible to achieve, and can Bob provide some of that balance?
Yeah, Bob can. As a matter of fact, I'm willing to set myself up as a scapegoat.
Mm-hmm.
I'm willing to offer any alternative viewpoints to our alternative at CKLN that anybody at the station is pressured by the CRTC to present. In other words, we need some straight points from the center position, I'll do it. Mm-hmm. We need some violent opinions from the right, I'll do it. If you want some opinions from the left, I'll do it. In other words, I will provide the alternative point of view to whatever they think we're not accomplishing.
So you individually will provide that balance. It won't be necessary to go out and seek the zealots and the right-wing fanatics. You will be everything.
That's
at
right.
Once.
Yeah, I will be whatever we need to do. I mean, I don't know how often we have to present this balanced view, but If they want, if the executive wants to inform me what the topic is this week that we have to present the balanced view on, I'll do it. Because we know Bob has no point of view, so he can be any point of view, right? And he can make people believe he believes in the point of view he's expressing at the time. So as a scapegoat actor of the need for ecological presentation of viewpoints, Bob is the candidate for that position, if the executive wants it. All right?
I don't see how they can turn it down, quite frankly.
All right, so we got that covered.
Okay.
And now, we got some items here. A lot of things have been happening the last couple of weeks, right? A lot of Bob's predictions are coming true. Media ecology has been taken over by the subgenii and the pinks. The pinks, though, are trying to enforce it through their backwards version, through censorship, going after somebody who writes a visual space medium, you know. You have the acoustic temple bureaucracy, right hemisphere boys hoiked up by the satellite environment, the Khomeinis, the mean combs, right? They are angry and take personal, more threatening than an atomic bomb or a cruise missile. They take more threatening a book. Now, this shows Bob's point that we're past the end of the world, and it's a battle of the media now. The media are fighting the battle of Jericho. All right? So tribal archetypes are now inside of media archetypes. So you have the battle between the acoustic space of Khomeini versus the visual space of the West. Right? And the West, not knowing Bob's knowledge, not knowing the effects of the electric environment on the right hemisphere person, right hemisphere tribe, are shocked at the intensity of the reaction of Khomeini. All right? They don't know how serious this is, that real war is in the media. In other words, the Khomeini and them have been listening to Bob's show. They said, that's right, we've got to go into media ecology. We've got to turn off the environment. But, of course, they love the electric environment for its acoustic effect, so they want to turn off the visual environment, the book. All right? We'll deal more with that if you want to, but I got to get on some other topics.
Okay.
Now, a lot of people are wondering why. Good point, Ken?
No, I just have the book, the Satanic version.
You just bought it?
How about a week and a half ago?
So you...
Before it was all the
brouhaha. Oh, you're claiming you got in before it started. You just, out of interest, personal interest, no media hype for you.
Yeah.
You got in there before. Okay, that's all right.
You're a dead man.
I know. Yeah.
Well, listen, you tell him you got Bob.
Yeah, I know.
Tell him we'll turn off the electric environment and he'll be weak. He'll be mild-mannered under pre-electric conditions or post-electric conditions. All right, now another interesting thing is, why is Rain Man, the movie, which critics say is okay, but not real popular, not an excellent piece of work. Why is Rain Man getting all these Oscar nominations and becoming maybe the movie of the year? Well, what's the hidden ground? Obviously, the movie meets a need in the audience that the directors, the creators of the movie, the distributors of it, the Wall Street connections to it, the pink connections to it, did not foresee. And what is Rain Man about? It's about an autistic savant. All right, is an autistic person someone you can't match with, totally autonomous, creating its own fantasy world, or
did you say an artistic savant?
Yeah, that's what Rain Man is. That Dustin Hoffman plays not an idiot savant, mm-hmm. an autistic savant.
Like I often think of you as an idiot savant,
huh.
Sometimes, but an artistic savant is something I've never heard.
Well, that's what I am. See, you look at me as
a
rearview mirror.
An artistic savant.
Yeah, an artistic savant.
Not an autistic
savant. But the reason Rain Man resonates with a chord in the audience, in the global theater public, is that Rain Man is about, and it's a summing up of the last 8 years of Reagan's regime. Rain Man is about Ronald Reagan. There's a pun there, Rain Man, Reagan. Many kids have said the name Reagan is by saying Rayman, it's the same. So Ronald Reagan, the Teflon president, it was the perfect autistic savant as the acoustic space and tactile space icon. All right, he was a savant in a sense. They call him the great communicator. The pinks do, anyways. Well, we subgeniuses know he couldn't communicate, but we also know that he wasn't supposed to communicate because making is the predominant form under tactile electric conditions, not matching. So we understood the appeal of Reagan's making ability. But the pinks called it a great communicator, a savant, a wise man, wise tribal elder. Now, the autistic part is that nobody could connect to him. He denied everything that happened in his administration, right? He even...
everything he thought he did had nothing to do with what happened, and everything that he said didn't happen did happen. So
he's conveniently forgotten a lot of things.
Well, not he forgotten, it never registered. It's an autistic. In the movie, Dustin Hoffman, at the closing scene, is that he's still in his own private citadel of consciousness space, and his younger brother, in the closing scene, doesn't connect with him, sees that Hoffman has not connected really with him in the way that normal pinks would like to be connected, and even subgeniuses. So you have there the resonant interval and the discontinuity of the interpersonal reactions exemplified by the relationship of the brother and Dustin Hoffman as the Rain Man. Mime, the electric autonomy we all have under super angel electronic conditions. Now, Reagan was the image for that, the icon to play that back to us. And he was autistic in a sense that he came in, caused some kind of change or miming of the present, which shocked all the pink sensibilities, and then left the same person. Never really connected with us, but created a sensation, all right? So that is the meaning of Reagan's presidency, and that is the meaning of the appeal of the movie Rain Man. And this has never been said before. This is the kind of stuff you get here on Bob's show. Stuff that's never been said that is accurate, that describes really the appeal of whatever's going on. And the appeal of that movie, its effect is bigger than the intention of the people who made the movie, because it is about, and it's from their pink subconscious, it's about what happened in the past 8 years. All right, it's a summing up. The movie came out just as he was leaving office. That's, I wanted to bring that up, and weeks ago, but didn't get a chance. Now
I can't really comment. I haven't seen the film. I'm sorry.
All right, I'm sorry.
Can I just interject for a second?
Yeah.
We're in another environment here, aren't we, tonight? So people, as they often do, might be calling, but they might be calling the other line, so we won't know that, will we?
Oh, what line do they call?
So I thought maybe we should call, have people call 595-1478 tonight.
Good, and that'll, we won't have to use the little...
Yeah, but that we can't connect with 1655, the normal number, so I just wanted to interject with that.
So tonight we will be able to broadcast them clearly than before.
Yeah, but they have to call the other number. Okay, so if you have a question for Bob tonight.
Yeah, 595-1478.
Okay.
All right, the other thing is that it's not that I'm concentrating on the American context too much. It's that the American environment is a world environment. Now, I'm not going to explain how that is. I've said that before, but I just want to explain why I'm going to bring up another American item, which is very important, which Mulroney uses also, which is the crisis that George Bush has over the John Tower nomination. All right, now, this is really symbolic of the Secret Council of Ten, my colleagues, now my employees, the work they got and the knowledge they got from me and how they apply it. Now, everybody's saying George Bush blew his honeymoon with the press, with the people, with this controversy over John Tower and also over James Baker funding third world debt that his bank was involved in, all right? These kind of crises are necessary for Bush's success as a president under tactile conditions. What we have here is a replay of the syndrome, what I call the FDR syndrome. You see, the appeal of FDR in the 30s was that he used to have fireside chats on the radio. And then the newspapers would rise up and attack him for whatever policies and programs he was bringing in. And it would look like to the average consumer of the radio environment that FDR was a man in the phone booth with 1,000 tanks pointed at him. The tanks being the hot media of the press, all right? The point of view media, books and newspapers and magazines. These were all very critical of FDR. Now, that made FDR a sympathetic figure for the population, for the pinks, all right? So the idea to be a really great president, like Reagan was, and to orchestrate it, is to have a lot of scandals, have a lot of anger in the media, in the print media, against you. All right, because then that creates, through the empathetic effect of television or the electric environment in general, a great sympathy with the president. All right, so now Bush, what's he do? He went, and Reagan did that. All right, so Bush, Contragate, that was a battle between the newspaper world and the TV world for the advertising dollar. That was the
top-down version of it. The bottom-up version on the media effect was Reagan needed it to make himself leave in 1989 the presidency a powerful person, a powerful, successful image. You know what I mean? You create the disease and offer the cure. So for anybody in the journalistic pink world wondering about what's going on and thinking Bush is maybe lost the game already, no way. Bush is winning it. He's creating the disease. He's created all kinds of controversies, which will create the FDR phone booth syndrome, and he will become a very sympathetic president and do well. And so I think he knew that, and he started off with the scandals immediately. Okay? I mean, he couldn't have himself shot like Reagan did back in 81. So that was done. So, you know, don't even get your cabinet appointed. That's the new strategy, right? He's going to have a no-cabinet presidency, probably because they're Bolshevik controlled the cabinet, right, through the Pentagon, and Bush is the only Rockefeller guy, so he really can't have any of his Pentagon cabinet come in around him. So he'll have the whole thing stalled for 2 or 3 years while he runs a sympathetic government. Yeah. Yeah, Mike, look like you want to say something. Okay. That was another brilliant point that was said first here on CKLN by Bob, right? Now, you guys, did he take a smoke break?
Yeah.
He couldn't take it, eh? Well, look, you guys will be more creative because you heard what I said. It'll affect your brains, your emotions, and your feelings. So he misses it, and he'll probably have trouble with his smoking for a long time. So.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Great. Okay, now, what would you guys like to say? You guys are new church members.
Well, I mean, I understand. Who are the Pinks again? I mean, like, I'm sort of getting the gist of who they are, but I'd like to have it clarified in my mind exactly who the Pinks are.
Well, I used to say the Pinks are whoever irks you. All right? But what do you think I mean by that? And maybe you'll come up with another definition. What do I think? That if a Pink is anybody who irks you, what's another way of saying that?
I'd say, it sounded like you said Pink as far as some of the neoconservative movement that's sort of underlying society right now. I mean,
I wouldn't. They are Pinks, but I wouldn't limit it to that. Pinks are anybody who irks you, and you have friends who irk you, people who are not neoconservatives, right?
Yeah, that's true, I guess.
Are our voices coming through?
Yeah, you're on the air now.
Okay, I was just...
Okay, well, say something.
Them commies again?
No, we don't mean by Pink. We don't mean commies. All right.
Well, then I was in the dark too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pinks are they're the majority.
Oh, okay.
They're the majority. You'll find in most situations the Pinks at this point, through history up to this point, have been always in control. The subgeniuses are the ones. The magic minority, you know, the ones who really create.
It's a very subjective thing, a Pink, depending on the person.
Well, not for me, but because I have a comprehensive view. I mean, I don't mind being a Pink.
Yeah.
But subgeniuses haven't got comprehensive awareness. They can't be a Pink yet. Pinks don't have comprehensive awareness. They don't want to be a subgenius. See, I'm both. So I can tell who's who, but I would, I'll grant you that it is subjective up to the point of becoming Bob. All right? Then it's subjective and objective at the same time. Comprehensive.
Yeah.
Is there anything else there?
No, it's just...
Yeah, okay, that's a good question.
I was just wondering, I'm not really familiar with your show and...
You're not? I thought you were a long-time listener. No, that's how you got in here.
Well, I've listened to a couple of your shows, but I don't understand whether you play the role of deity or the vicar of your church on this planet, or what role do you play in your church?
Hey, man, what are you shutting the door for?
It's okay. Just getting some feedback. That's all. I have to keep it closed.
Oh, they won't be able to hear, though.
Well, that's a good point.
Yeah, no, leave it open.
You can converse amongst yourselves, though.
Feedback is good. Oh, yeah, that's right. Feedback is good, though, Kent. We want more feedback.
No,
oh, all right. Sure. Okay, yeah. Your question was, what am I, right? A deity? that's a hard question. You mean you don't get it? You don't get what I'm doing. The 22nd Messiah.
How do you perceive yourself, or is your role always changing?
Oh, no, it's always the same, but the ground's always changing. The audience is always changing, right? So I have to reflect that subjectivity, which comes back to the point you're making.
Your environment is changing, so Bob has to change along with it.
Yeah, and Bob is the deity in the sense that he's the only one who's fully aware of the effects of the changes.
Well, So you're aware of the changes in the audience,
yeah.
Or you claim to be, anyway.
Yeah, I have.
So that's the most magical element of this show.
Yeah, that I'm aware of the changes, but also there's a continuity, a perceptual and conceptual continuity to what I'm doing. In other words, there is a constant citadel of consciousness, in other words, chairmanship of the Secret Council of Ten, that is there all the time. And in that sense, I'm a deity. I am a god, and I am expressing the new divine nature, not the old god nature, the new divine nature, which includes the electric effects, which is the new nature, therefore there's a new god for the new nature, not the old god, the Newtonian god or the pagan god or the Gnostic god. Those are gods of the old form. The Gnostic god comes back as a popular figure, rearview mirror figure, now under electric condition.
What do you mean by a rearview mirror?
Well, you know, when you're driving a car, you look in a rearview mirror and you see the past, you see what went past you, you see behind, you know. That's the rearview mirror metaphor. And so the Gnostic image of God or goddess worship is a rearview mirror image based on the old nature. It has nothing to do with the new electric nature. The reason that Gnosticism takes over in popular effect is that it conceptually has resonance with the electric environment. But only Bob knows the effects of that, so he's one up on that or one below it or all levels of it. You know what I mean? He can see the content, rearview mirror reflection. For example, the New Age movement, especially focused around Dimensions magazine or all those New Age groups and institutes here in Toronto, that's all rearview mirror activity. All right? But it's very popular because it's people looking for concepts to explain the effects they have. So Bob's not a New Age god. Bob is a... Well, you fill in the blank, but Bob covers it all, you know, and he covers it up. I mean, I protect you. I cover it, and I create coverage, news coverage, and I cover up.
I don't think you really protect us. I think you try and, maybe protecting us by exposing every little...
Little
absurd possibility.
Yeah. Yeah.
That you can possibly conceive of, especially I'll be concerned with politics from what I heard. I'm not familiar with your show, so I don't know whether politics is usually the...
But obviously, you haven't heard much of my show, but obviously I look like and act like a god, right? There's something there that you pick up immediately.
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind, Bob,
it's me. Okay, well, let's just take the pressure off these guys for a minute. I don't know if we should play any Subgenius tape unless one of you guys take that tape and do not let Mike touch it. He's got that pizza on the fingers. I'm not getting it on my tape. But what's the time, Mike?
It's a little after 12:30.
We got no phone calls, 595-1478.
Yeah.
Do you want to put some staying on if you'll behave, or should I? I do want to read a file. I have to.
I'm fine without the tape tonight.
All right, yeah, because we have a backlog. This is something I think these guys are going to really like. This is some... file readings from a Secret Council of Ten meeting that I was a part of in the early 80s.
This is what? Secret Council of Ten?
That's the satellite government of the four worlds. And the four worlds are, the first world is the traditional industrial Western world. All right?
Mm-hmm.
The second world is Russian bureaucracy or the socialist world. All right, a little different from more of a tribal consensus versus the Western individualistic consensus.
Yeah.
That's the second world.
Yeah.
The third world is the undeveloped world, so-called. The third world is the third world. The rest of the world that's not in the communist bloc in Europe or Asia or the Western bloc of the first world. The rest of the world, all right?
Mm-hmm.
The ones who came into the 20th century in industrial terms on a different level. We won't say it's up or below or behind or ahead of us, different level.
I think you can say that in some ways it is behind.
In some ways, yeah. But now this is where you're going to get some new information.
Not that I consider what we have to be progress. But
I know. Well, I'll make it simple for you. What you're trying to say is that there's a fourth world, and the fourth world's the electric world, which goes around all countries and bureaucracies and the whole planet.
Some more than others.
No, the satellite environment is around the whole planet. The planet extended itself.
Well, the electric atmosphere hasn't really penetrated. I would argue third world countries to the.
Oh no! The third world, the crisis in the third world is because of the radio environment, the electric environment. That's why they have the paranoia there. They're not so industrialized, not protected by the visual bias, so they have a lot of paranoia created by putting the radio environment, the TV environment, into their tribal milieu.
That's true.
Yeah. Now that, and then the satellite goes around. It's not that they're the only ones paranoid. The whole world is paranoid under satellite conditions, creating the identity crisis in the West that we've had for 30 years, and the identity crisis in Europe and Russia. So, and that's why all worlds are suffering under the fourth world. And also reaping the benefits of it. So that's why I don't distinguish whether the third world's ahead or below or above us. That's irrelevant compared to the effects of the fourth world. All right? Mm-hmm. All right, so now why did I bring that up? Do you remember why I went into the four worlds?
Well, you were going to bring up your next little file there.
Yeah. Sort
of filling us in a little bit more. Yeah, the Secret Council of Ten.
Oh, you asked about what the Secret Council... Okay, so the satellite world has a secret government. This comes out in scandals all over the world, like Iran-Contragate. Every now and then some kind of scandal surfaces where there seems to be influence behind the scenes. Well, the world under electric conditions is the size of a... It's smaller than a room, but just for visual space metaphor, it's the size of a room. And the people who rule it are about 13. They rule the whole planet, and there's 13 of them. Three were offed, okay? There was 10 left. That was years ago. I was a member. I was one of the co-rulers of the world, all right? I had infiltrated it since World War II. There was an election last year in the Secret Council 10 to make a chairman. In other words, because this room is experiencing the electric implosion, it's a musical chair situation. You remember the game Musical Chairs, where you play music and then you take a chair away?
Oh, yeah.
All right? And then eventually there'll be one chair left and several people trying to get on that one chair. Well, that has already happened, and the battle was who would get into that chair. Well, I won the election earlier last year, March 88. I won the Secret Council 10 election. There were 40 voters on it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I'm... running the Secret Council of Ten. I pretty well run the planet. I run the solar system pretty well right now since the Battle of Harvest Moon, but I won't go into that. That's for... I've explained it enough for regular listeners.
Mm-hmm.
And... but when I was a... on the Secret Council of Ten and not in chairmanship position in the early 80s, there was a recognition of my authority, and there were many questions asked of me among the Secret Council of Ten members. And I read off the files, the minutes of those meetings, all right? And I'm going to read you a sample of a file from the Secret Council of Ten meetings.
Okay.
All right? Now, this was about 19...
So this isn't top secret sort of stuff?
No, not now that I'm chairman. This stuff was top secret until I became chairman last year, and I'm releasing them.
Oh.
This is where I'm helping the subgeniuses. The subgenius
little tidbits now and then, right?
As much as possible, every couple of weeks, yeah. There was a problem a few months ago when I couldn't release as many files because I had to deal with my Bob tour in the United States.
Same problems if you release too much at one time?
Yeah, it's ecological the way I do it. But there was an expressed desire for more of them, so I'm going to read a file.
Okay,
yeah. Now, this file is about the seven levels of consciousness, all right? There are eight levels, but we'll start off with seven, all right? Someone asked what were the levels of consciousness in one of the meetings, and this is what I responded with. I said, and this is how the minutes go. Bob indicated that you asked about the seven levels of consciousness. This is what they are. The lowest being the mind, which correlates to the mineral level. The next level being the emotions, which correlates to the vegetable level. The mind being mineral because it is concerned with focusing on points, words, or concepts. Focusing on points, words, or concepts. Think of mineral patterns. The emotional level being vegetation because it is concerned with attachments or fear of losing attachments. All right? Plants attached to the ground, right? That's the emotional level. The feeling level being the third is correlated with the animal as it is responsive or reactive to that which is occurring around it. That's the feeling level. Very reactive. Now, the fourth level is the level of awareness. It's not Bob awareness, but it's awareness wherein one looks and sees, but neither feels nor has emotions nor thinks about what one sees or experiences. You people will experience that a lot under electronic conditions, but I don't want to confuse. You'll know what that means later. So this, Bob indicated in these minutes here from the Secret Council 10 meeting that this fourth level correlates to consciousness and to the mystic state. This is likened unto a catatonic state wherein there is no reaction or response, which was the third level, the animal level. There is simply awareness, no reaction or response. This is the fourth level, simply awareness. Bob indicated the fifth level as wherein one who is aware looks toward feeling and becomes responsive toward that which is occurring around the entity, responsive but with an awareness. In other words, he's responding to the feeling level, all right? Not
initiating
it? Yeah, not initiating, just watching it. In the fourth level, he didn't even really suppress the way the entity suppressed awareness of it, right? It wasn't responding. Now, the fifth level, he's beginning to respond again. And this fifth level being awareness of feeling. That wherein one is aware of feeling, the entity or subgenius, can look at their own responses and his own reactions to that which is occurring. So in the fifth level, you're aware of a feeling, you're getting your responses, you're aware of them. In other words, you're not suppressing awareness of them.
Mm-hmm.
Now the sixth level is that wherein the pink or the subgenius has an awareness of emotion, and one looks at the emotion, being aware of the attachments one puts upon oneself and being capable of taking those attachments off, even as one puts clothes on and takes clothing off. In other words, you see, the sixth level is awareness of the emotions. The second level was emotion. Awareness of that level, but not attached.
So the sixth level encompasses the second level.
Yeah, it's an awareness of the second level, but not a dead awareness, which is the fourth level. It's kind of dead in the sense it doesn't react. It allows itself to feel the second level. So the sixth level feels the second level.
So the fourth and the sixth level are two sub-levels of the second level.
Yeah, the fourth level
If you're in the second level, or you're experiencing the second level of consciousness, then it's either the fourth or the sixth.
Right.
One is
No, you can experience it as the second, just reacting in emotion, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then in the fourth level, you become aware of it. That's probably there all the time, but it's played down if you're stuck more in the second level. But as you get closer to the sixth level, the fourth level of awareness comes in.
So in other words, if for some reason I was born without this fourth and sixth level of consciousness, I could be the biggest emotional romantic and not even know it.
That's right. Correct.
Okay.
All right. Now, remember, the fifth level was an awareness of feeling, which was the third level. So five and three are related, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, the seventh level is that wherein one becomes aware of the mind, which was the first level, the mineral level, right?
What do you mean by the mind? I mean, that's a pretty vague term.
The mind, I will explain that in a second. The seventh level becomes aware of the mind. It re-engages the mind, the seventh level does, allows the mind to think its thoughts, to run, to move, to flow with its various thoughts and ideas. But in this seventh level, the entity, the pink and subgenius, does not identify with the thoughts, is not attached to the thoughts, but simply watches those thoughts move as one who watches a computer work. So the mind level is generally what we call thoughts. Now, if you really start being sensitive to it, sometimes your emotions and thoughts are very intertwined, right? It's hard to tell the difference. But for the purposes of these categories, the mind is what you think. The feeling level is what you feel on a sensory level, almost an instinctive level, and the middle level, the emotional level, is more somewhere between mind and feeling. All right, now Bob suggested in this meeting that the people attending the meeting, that the thoughts which ran through their minds suggested that they think that they were not those thoughts. Don't identify with them as yourself. That which is you is that which is aware of those thoughts which move through your consciousness, which gets back to what you said. Something about...
Which just tells me now that you're sort of facing this way.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't want to interrupt
that thought,
but just wanted to ask, why is it that you refer to yourself in the third person?
Well, that's what I'm talking about, because I am aware of myself. In other words, I'm not identifying with myself completely. So your question perfectly illustrates what I'm trying to talk about.
Oh,
good point. All right. So that which one is, if one is aware of those thoughts which move through your consciousness, but aware that it's not you, those thoughts are not you. This, Bob indicated that the mind itself equates to Lucifer. But the awareness of the mind equates to the Christ consciousness or the Bob consciousness. Awareness of
it. So you equate yourself more with Christ than Lucifer, not some that's beyond good and evil.
I equate with both. But the point is that in this logic, see, this is a continuous point of view that's being expressed here, so it takes sides.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And it's the nature of that kind of thinking, is that you're separating something from something else, therefore you create these separatenesses within it.
Well, why is so... I don't understand why you take the Christ...
Well, that's for the Western audience. It's a more popular response here. I mean, it's a simple term, right? I mean, there are many other cultures here, but just for simplicity... And remember, I'm talking to people at the Secret Council 10 who have that bias. This is a minutes from a Secret Council 10 meeting.
Yeah.
So I'm writing up to their... biases. So Bob indicated, now this is the eighth level of consciousness, which is pretty well what I am. The eighth level of consciousness is that level where an entity puts to practice and moves through life with those three higher levels of consciousness in action: the awareness of feeling, the awareness of emotion, and the awareness of mind, integrated as a trinity, wherein that awareness is observing in all levels of expression, but does not control those expressions. It simply observes what is. All right? So Bob indicated that any action of the mind which seeks to control one's behavior is not an action of awareness, but is an action of the mind. And when this occurs, Bob suggested that you look at this action of control without judging. For any action that judges is an action of the mind and is not an action of an awareness. It's not an action of awareness. Bob indicated the mind continually attempts to step above itself, to resurrect like the phoenix and rise above itself and judge itself and believe itself to have transmuted and to have become better. The mind continually attempts to look down upon what it has been, assuming that now it is better. Bob indicated this as but an ego rising from its ashes, taking an ego trip on its ego death. Bob suggested that when this occurs, you not judge this. Don't even judge that. You not put yourself down that you are going through this mind process where you're assuming you're better than the previous moment, right? You simply look at this from a level of awareness. This Bob awareness, when observing the mind in its various gyrations of one upsmanship, will gradually allow the mind to settle into a state of poise when the mind realizes it is not being judged and it is not getting by with its trickery. In other words, a state of slack. That's what Bob's about, is how to have slack. So we have the eight levels of consciousness.
What do you mean a state of slack, not how slack?
State of slack is what I just described in relation to the mind, a state of poise wherein the mind realizes it is not being judged and it is not getting by with its trickery.
That's a crucial word, isn't it?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. You probably can't hear him, but he just pointed out that slack is a very crucial word. That's what Bob is in one word. That's what this whole show is about.
We've had a couple, we had one call, and they hung up, so I thought maybe, you know, it would be good to have the listening audience interact again as well over the phone. So just to reiterate, the number is 595-1478 tonight.
Yeah, don't hang up.
Yeah, don't hang up again. Okay.
We'll just review that. The eight levels. The first level was mind, which is the mineral level. The second level is emotion, vegetable level. The third level was feeling, which is the animal level. The fourth level was awareness of these things, but not responding to them. Not responding to them. The fifth, sixth, and seventh levels were levels of awareness of them, but responding to mind, emotion, and feeling. The eighth level, not mentioned in the transcript here, which I didn't tell these guys and women everything, these guys and gals, I didn't tell them everything in the Council of Ten, because I wanted the subgeniuses to hear the truth when I had access to the media and was in the chairmanship position, right? And so you're hearing for the first time, it's post the files. The files are just a beginning and opener.
So you haven't enumerated the eighth.
The eighth level is Bob level. Well, the eighth level was, and I did describe that, In the transcript I have here, the eighth level of consciousness is that level where an entity puts to practice and moves through life with those three higher levels of consciousness. Now, that part wasn't in the minutes. I didn't tell them that. All right?
Wasn't in the minute?
No.
You mean so it wasn't actually discussed?
No. They only heard the seven levels, which was 1, 2, 3, 4, the level of awareness, and then 5, 6, and 7, the awareness of 1, 2, and 3 levels, but responding to them and being aware of them and allowing them to happen. In other words, allowing your mind to think thoughts and not identify and think you are the thoughts, allowing yourself to have emotions but not thinking that you are those emotions, allowing yourself to have feelings but not thinking that you are those feelings. That is the seventh level. That's the fifth, sixth, and seventh level. The eighth level is doing all of that plus more. So actually, the eighth level is described in the minutes here, but it's never been described under electric conditions.
That's the most ideal level to attain?
No,
level is particularly ideal because it's just a... sort of judgment in itself.
The answer is both, right? It's the level that you want to have. It's the level I have, but it's not the level that you need.
Again, because the answer is both, right?
That's right.
I'm sure that you can jump from level to level from minute to minute as well.
You see, you were a little confused there because the eighth level is described in the minutes, but I said no, they weren't. What I meant by that is that these minutes have never been read on an electric environment, never discussed under Bob conditions, which happens every second week on Wednesday night.
You've never done a reading then from your actual...
Not this reading. Yeah, I read the files, but they don't... I read the files, but they're different when they're being talked about and read over the radio environment. Different from the separate environment that they originally occurred in, which was the Secret Council 10 meeting.
How are they different?
Just a minute, we have someone.
You got to call her, Bob.
Great, we got to call her. Let it go.
Okay.
Yes, Bob.
Yeah.
Hey, listen.
Did you like that file?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good one.
That's right. Well, listen, I always hear a voice in my head since I was a kid, and I'm finally learning. Let's say you're about to like gossip about somebody. Always this voice will come in my head saying, "Don't do that. Don't do that." And then you do it anyways. Well, I'm finally learning to listen to that voice in my head. That little voice that talks immediately, and then my mind kicks in and goes, "Yeah, but you want to talk."
Well, that's the fourth level. That's awareness.
Yeah.
And now you'll notice that little voice is a million voices.
Right.
You become aware of all the parts that it has on the mind level, the emotion level, and the feeling level. And you're
the practical level too.
Yeah. Well, that's the animal level, I'd say, the instinctive level, the interacting with basic sensory life.
Right.
All right. So you got to see how it's a lot clearer tonight. We're on a different phone. It's normal.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
Praise Mike. Praise Ken.
Praise the electricity.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what you're moving to the fourth level where you've become aware of the voice. Now, you're going to find out that voice, there's a mental voice, there's a little emotional voice, and a little feeling voice.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to discover the subtleties of the differences.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to have to learn to flow